listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 216 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good buddy Sean Orford. You alright, Sean?
I'm good, how are you?
Top notch.
Top notch.
Feeling good, ready to go. We're talking about generosity today, aren't we?
We are.
We're being very generous with our time here.
Do you think?
This podcast, yeah, 216 episodes of this show.
God, it's been years.
All for free. Not bad, eh? But you can, if you want to donate a bit, you can buy a copy of our book at liveinthepresent.co.uk.
You can.
Or we have various books that Sean has written over the years.
Yeah, and there will be more.
Digital files, meditation stuff. There's even some free meditation files if you stick your email address in the box at the top of the website. We'll send them to you and we'll send you weekly alerts about each one of these shows as well. How are you doing? What have you been up to?
I'm good. It was Robert's birthday, so we went to...
Your little boy.
My little boy.
Not 20, so little.
29 years old. So we went to a brewery for the day, and were taught how to make beer. And people kept giving us beer to drink.
Oh, yeah.
Which was quite interesting, the different flavours.
Little thimbles of it, or you'd swig it?
No, they were half pints. And there was one gentleman... He was, I think, off his face, I think, was the phrase.
Not you, though.
No, it wasn't me, sadly.
You kept it together, didn't you?
Yeah.
So did you get to know the finer points of different ales and different...
Yeah, you're looking at different
a bit more
recipes that you get, yeah.
That's a bit peaty, that one. That's a
Yeah,
bit...
and doing, looking at the malt and whether the malt's been cooked or roasted or whatever, and the difference it has, like dark beer, light beer.
Is that big keg in your fridge then? Is that
That's the one.
5 litre. Or was it 5 litres?
Yeah, 5 litres, yeah. Yeah. But it lasts for about a month. But once you open it, you have to consume it within 48 hours.
Whoa.
Because it loses its fizz.
Okay. Ah, so yeah, we need to have a party, hey?
Yeah, that's the deal. Yeah. I want my pizza oven working, then we can have a pizza party and the beer.
Very good. All right, cool. Briefly, before we get onto the show, there's been a bit of the news. It kind of comes and goes from the news, doesn't it, at the moment? There's this kind of whole right to die thing going on. Do you want to quickly talk about that?
We were talking about should we do a podcast on it, and it's kind of near the knuckle a bit. Maybe we need to. But there's a guy at the moment who's going to court trying to get permission to have his life ended when he's ready to do it. He's got motor neurone disease.
Yeah. Not much fun.
But we're surrounded by things like that. There's the issues going on with the little baby who the parents want to take him to.
Charlie.
Yeah.
That's his face here.
And the court are saying, or the doctors here are saying, no, you shouldn't, it's cruel.
You shouldn't keep him alive.
Yeah, it's unfair to do that.
Yeah.
So at one end, we've got one guy saying, I want to end my life. And at the other end, we've got... parents that are saying, you know, we don't want the child's life to be ended. I'm personally for myself, I'm with the view that we all have the right to end our lives if we want to. The bit that becomes a controversy in this, or we say controversy if you say something, is that someone else has to be involved in the process. That's what we're saying, isn't it? Is that we want a doctor or somebody to...
sign it off.
Yeah, and to actually do the act.
Yeah, there's a difference between what's going on here and, like, a suicide, which can leave behind a whole trail of destruction.
Yeah.
Can't it? Whereas something like this, assuming he's got the backing of family and friends and...
But if you can, you go to Switzerland, you go to somewhere like Dignitas, and you can have what is effectively a lethal injection. Is that acceptable? Is that right? Well, it depends on your point of view, doesn't it? And there's all kinds of things come into that, like spiritual beliefs, religiosity, dogmas. You know, there's all kinds of things that are going to raise their head at this point. And one of the fears in law is always, if it was signed off as being okay to do it, does that mean that people will be coerced into doing it by horrible relatives that wanted their money and things like that?
You need kind of certain protections in place, don't you?
And
it's not an exact science, this stuff, is it? when you're dealing with people's emotions. And
yeah, but this guy is saying that he's got motor neurone disease. He's at a point where he can make that decision coherently, and he's saying that he wants it set up so that at a point where he can no longer cope, he can say, okay, I want to go now.
Yeah,
he's not saying I want to go this minute. But effectively, it sounds like the courts are saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go with that.
Mm. What's this space, eh?
Yeah. And it's going to be a huge issue because we have this bulging older population.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a test case, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but then a lot of people are saying that if you allow this, you're giving permission for society to get rid of all the old people, kind of thing.
Mm.
You know, save the money.
Yeah, I think it's Jerry Sadowitz, he's a comedian, said that all old age pensioners should be slaughtered at birth. I'll forget that line, it's a good one. I can laugh at anything I can. Anyway, we're going to crack on with a slightly chirpier topic, because a new study published in the journal Nature found that generosity made people happier. So we're going to talk about generosity, aren't we? Which, that line on itself, it's not that surprising to me, to be honest, that generosity makes you happier, because every now and again I do generous things.
And do you feel happier?
And I generally will feel a bit happier.
Does that mean if you were more generous, then you'd feel even happier?
I assume so. I guess one of the questions we need to ask today is that why, if we know that it works, because everyone does, surely, everyone, you know, with a kind of reasonable heart inside them, knows that being generous gives you a little buzz, doesn't it?
So if you gave me £5, would it make you feel better? No.
Well, I've always seen your wallet stuffed full of 20s and 50s, so I know you don't need it. You'd be taking from me. Why don't we do it more, I guess, is one of the questions we need to come to. But what do you reckon, Sean? Are we naturally inclined to be generous, or do you think we're more naturally inclined to be hold on to what we've got?
I think that if you look at a lot of hunter-gatherer groups, that they do share. If someone goes out and kills an animal, then it belongs to everybody, and everybody shares in that.
Yeah.
I think it's only when we start to get more civilised, I don't know if that's the right word, maybe more kind of urbanised or materialised, you know, we get more stuff.
Yep.
That we then start to say, no, this is mine,
really?
You know, not yours. We stop sharing. And maybe there is an issue with when we stop sharing, we have a good chance of we stop caring as well.
Yeah.
Sharing and caring, it's good. They roll together.
Yeah, well, I've got obviously two little freaks that live in my house, or three actually, but two of them are especially small. And I see it with all the kids of a similar age, that they get to a certain point where they are not very good at sharing with toys and stuff, and they want to hold on to stuff. And even like Jacob, man, he's the right pain. Whatever William, my eldest lad, has got, Jacob wants, so he'll just kind of take things. And Will's really cool, actually, to be fair. He's quite generous to a point until he kind of snaps and pushes Jacob over or something.
But when you live in a material world of products, the products are individualised. If you live in a collective community, like hunter-gatherers, and there is a spade, and the spade is to do the work of the group, then the spade belongs to everybody. Yeah? If you're at a point where we now have the resources and the riches to be able to give you, Ed, your own spade, so that we now have this idea of attachment to object,
yeah,
then you might rightfully be angry that someone else has pinched or is using your spade. It's my spade. How dare you use
my
spade?
Can I borrow this iPad?
No. Absolutely no chance at all. It's my iPad.
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe it's because Jacob has been kind of... We have a ridiculous number of toys at home that, you know, Jacob has his toys and William has his toys. They do share and they do kind of muck into with each other's, but that Jacob will then go to, like, a playgroup or whatever, mums and tots thing, or dads and tots, and there's toys there for everybody, but even then he'll kind of go to his corner with his little thing that he thinks is his. He won't let anyone else play with it all afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he'll get there, because William is the same, and he's kind of learned to be a bit more chilled out about that stuff.
But if you think of it as a macrocosm and a microcosm, that if you look at the fact that I can say, no, these things are mine, and I'm not going to let you have them, I'm not going to share them with you, what happens if you scale that up through evolution, industrialization? So we now say, you know, this country is mine and you can't have it, or this food is mine and you can't have it.
Resources and all that's where all the.
So, but it's the same thing, isn't it? Surely. Just on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
You know, this is our oil.
I know, well, yeah, but the interesting thing about that is that we always come back onto politics, don't we, on this show, but the US have gone down this route now, or Trump has, of abandoning the Paris Climate Change Agreement, and he seems to be a bit more prone to burning things and chucking up the things into the atmosphere. And the interesting thing about that is that that's my air as well, you know, I'm breathing that air, and we might be on the other side of the world, or...
Still comes over this
still
way.
Still heads over, and it still has an impact, doesn't it, so...
Yeah.
There's not a huge amount of generosity on that side.
Yeah,
it's all very well kind of keeping the resources for yourself, but when it ultimately ends up there in the atmosphere, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we had the Russian Chernobyl went up, and I was living in Wales at the time.
Yeah,
and all the sheep around where I was became radioactive. Yeah, they're eating the grass.
In like a cool X-Men kind of way, like they started flying around with capes on and
no.
Superpowers.
No. They just went, bah! Yeah. That was the joke. What's a Geiger counter in Wales? Bah! the issues were that it happens over there in Russia, but it affects us here.
Yeah.
So we are now in that global community. Mm. If Trump decides to send a load of stuff up in the air, it doesn't just affect them, it affects everybody.
Yeah.
That's true for every country. You know? And then you can get into the whole things about if you stop eating meat and stop eating beef, then there would be less methane in the air because I can't remember how many litres of gas cows belch and fart each day that go up into the atmosphere.
And methane is even worse than CO2.
Yeah.
As a greenhouse gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, got a bit of work to do there, but let's talk about how generosity can give you a little kick, a little boost. Because, like I say, we've all had it where we've done something. You were talking before we came on air about a nice little story about when you were at a petrol station. What was that?
Oh, yeah, long time ago. I was at a petrol station. There was a lady who had a couple of kids with her, and she had put £10 of fuel in the car and had rushed in to pay, and then she didn't have a purse. And she was panicking and getting all upset. And I said, don't worry, I'll pay it for you. So I paid the £10. And she took my name and address, promising to return it. And within a couple of days, an envelope arrived with a £10 note and thank you. You know.
One of the interesting things you said at the start was that it was a long time ago, but you remember it quite vividly. I'm guessing because we remember things like that, don't we?
Yeah, but the idea is, does being generous make you feel better? Isn't it? And it was lovely to help her out.
Yeah,
you know, that was good. One of the things when we were talking before this, I was saying that one of my issues is a reverse issue in the sense that if I walk past someone who has nothing and I don't give them anything, I feel bad. So in some ways, if I'm looking at it mindfully and honestly, then some of my motivation to give people things isn't so I feel good; it's more that so I don't feel bad. Does that make sense? It's kind of inside out a bit.
Yeah.
But that joke about Ree saying to me, if you don't stop giving people money, we're going to be bankrupt. I suppose in some ways I've been...
Not that Ree's not a generous person.
She is. She's a generous
person. Fantastically generous with her time. And
yeah. It's just that she's saying to me, I was overgenerous. But I suppose I've lived in worlds where I've had nothing and people have had nothing. And knowing what it's like to have nothing, not knowing whether there was going to be anything more than what you hadn't got now.
Yeah.
You know. So I suppose I have a kind of empathy with that.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about giving? Do you feel better when you give?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, big time, you know. And I mean, there's the financial sense, which in recent years I've been more able to get involved in that side of things because business has been going better and... I've been able to just in the last year or so, people will stick like Just Giving links on Facebook or Twitter, and I can just do it without even thinking about it, and you get a nice little email in reply to say thanks for all that.
Yeah,
I've mentioned in the show a few months ago. I was cycling home from work and there was a guy just in the proper middle of nowhere on this cycle route, but no one else would have seen him all day, and he was lying there. Initially, I thought he was dead. kind of gave him a bit of a prod and a poke, and he kind of came to. And I just happened to have 20 quid in my pocket, and I don't usually carry cash around. And I did go initially. I did say, "All right, mate, I'm glad you're okay." And I went to move away, and then I turned around on my bike, went back, and I said, "Hey, wake up," and I gave him the 20 quid. And he was amazingly grateful, and I haven't seen him since. Who knows where he is, but...
maybe he made a wise investment with 20
pounds. Maybe he stuck it all on red.
And he's now rich.
But yeah, like, I remember it, you know, quite vividly, and yeah, it's a little ego boost, and it's in a selfish sense, but, you know, also, I'm sure it brightened up his day a little bit too.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, but that idea of doing things for others, and it doesn't have to be money, does it? I mean, we can give time, we can give hope, we can give support. There's lots of giving that we can do. I just love that idea of, if we all look after each other, we're all right. And that isn't just money. That's on all levels.
Yeah.
You know, I was clearing out the wardrobe a few months ago and took quite a few pairs of jeans and trousers and stuff down to Thompson's Mission. Have you seen that in Birkenhead? I assume it was originally a seaman's mission, I would think, but they collect things to give to homeless people. Yeah, and so I walked in there with a whole load of pairs of trousers and stuff like that, and they were just so amazingly grateful for what I give them. And I thought, God, I have a wardrobe full of stuff. I need to go through it again. Why am I hoarding all this stuff when people that need it could be using it? What am I doing?
Yeah.
And that must be true for virtually everyone that's listening to this now. If you actually went through your house, how much stuff could you give to other people? Because Robert's now moved out, in effect, into their new house, we've been sorting his room out. And the furniture that we didn't need, we loaded up and took it to the donation station.
You're a good egg, aren't you, guys?
Down in Chester. And that's it's a cancer charity, that.
Yep.
So... and because of the work that we do with Clatterbridge, you know, cancer's quite high on our list of things to look after.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But that kind of stuff. And when you go in the donation station, the stuff that's in there is incredible.
Mm.
The stuff that people would normally just tip or burn or something, you know?
Yeah, well, I was unloading some rubble and some actual rubbish the other week, and yeah, some of the stuff you see getting loaded into the skips and the trucks there is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Will's first bike, actually a balance bike, was a gift from a good friend of mine who was at the tip unloading stuff, and he saw a guy chucking this balance bike into a skip, and he was like, whoa, hang on, can I have that? And Will learnt to ride a bike on it, basically.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But that was generous, you know, because one guy was chucking it away, you and my pal, fished it out. Some people might see that as a bit of a slap in the face, like they might want a brand new bike for their children, but I saw his, yeah, amazingly generous, and yeah, he's a mean little cyclist now, Will. Well ahead of schedule, he was cycling around when he was like 4 or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, no, it's good, and I think that idea that we can help others, so it's like Jocelyn, whose pictures are up there.
Yeah,
who's a little girl we've supported since she was a baby, and she's now going to secondary school in Honduras.
Yeah,
you know, which is reminding me, I need to write her a letter. I'm going to get Jody to translate it into Spanish.
Yeah,
which would be good.
Cool, Jody B. Yeah, nice one. Yeah. I think there is a bit of a trap you can fall into in terms of generosity, because we do see it in kind of terms of like the Just Giving links that we see. To be generous can be kind of a quick fix just by chucking a bit of a tenner, or you might watch like Red Nose Day on, you know, once a year, whereas not that it's not generous to help those charities out, but real generosity can goes much deeper, doesn't it, in terms of...
But it's an everyday thing, isn't it? It's like, I think to hold the door open for someone who's coming along behind you is an act of generosity.
Yeah.
To say thank you for someone when they make a cup of tea is a generous thing to do. And it isn't just money, although money is very often important because people don't have it. You know, it's a bit like in the supermarkets here now, never ever thought I'd see this, but there are now collection bins and trolleys
Oh, yeah.
for the food banks.
Yeah.
You know, can you afford to chuck a few things in here to feed other people?
Yeah, easy peasy.
And it does seem basically bonkers that in our society, at this time in social and economic cycles, that we have people that are using food banks. And that, to me...
Even in full-time employment, apparently. Some nurses that are struggling big time and relying on these places.
Yeah. And yet we have money to buy high-speed train lines, and we have money to create weapons of mass destruction, because we have them.
We all pay for them as well. You and I, our taxes go for that.
But we see that as more of a priority. It's more of a priority to have a faster rail network and to have weapons that we can kill other people with than it is to feed and house the people that we have.
Yeah. Although the rail network, just to devil's advocate, can bring prosperity as well, you know, and transport and jobs and et cetera, et cetera.
And all those weapons can protect us against all these enemies that are going to come and get us.
Yeah.
I mean, we can always justify what it is that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not that sure that being able to get from one end of Britain to the other in a faster speed is actually helping a lot of people. If we were a massive burgeoning country that had massive industries that were going on, but we don't actually produce much anymore. Do you know?
Yeah,
what are we doing here?
Service based stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can be in London in seconds now with your Skype.
Yeah.
Skype connection and all that. So can I. Yeah, it's complicated, that stuff. There's a great article I'm going to link to. There's a few actually that you should read. Nine ways generous people see the world differently, which I found interesting, and it's got a great little summary at the end, if I may just read this one out. By definition, true generosity requires a level of contentment. It recognises the reality that giving our resources to another person means we have less for ourselves. In this way, contentment forms the foundation for generosity. But in response, surprisingly enough, generosity also becomes the fuel for greater contentment. So it's weird, isn't it, how you can kind of give what you have, give things away, but have more in return.
I think that one of the big things in that kind of statement is that we look at the idea, you know, this idea that it means that we have less, but we live in a society where we have too much in the first place.
Yeah.
I don't know, is it possible to have too much? The idea that we have more than we need, whilst other people have less than they need. So in that idea, if we all look after each other, then we kind of equal that out. The thing about giving to others makes us feel better. But if you look at our society, even people in our society who are on benefits are still reckoned to be in the top 10 richest people on the planet.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people who have so little. Yeah, and we would say, you know, maybe the middle of our society would look at people who are on benefits and see them as very poor. And yet someone from another country might look at them and see them as being very rich.
It'd be interesting to go to places where they're kind of way much further down that scale of inverted commas success and, you know, riches. I'm thinking of like Michael Palin documentaries. You see him where he's in the middle of Mongolia or whatever, and he gets invited into some yurt or a shack, and, you know, the family that have nothing, they just give everything they can,
sharing
to kind of just for that shared experience of happiness and generosity. And he has to sit there eating like a goat's eye that's been boiled in a stew or something. Is that it? He's like, yeah, it's lovely this, but you can tell that he might be secretly wanted to be sick from what he's eating, but he recognises that generosity and how powerful it is.
See, I found that with travelling around the world is that people are fundamentally generous. You know, that you tip up in a village in the middle of nowhere in Africa or somewhere, and people don't throw you out. They're kind of interested. They want to talk to you, and they say, "Come and have some food," and they look after you. There's a natural instinct in the majority of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been my own experience, that most people in the world are good, generous people.
Shacking up with warlords or whatever, yeah, you're going to be all right, aren't you, generally?
Yeah. And, I mean, walking around Qatar, the amount of people that just chat to you, that you just start talking, you know. And that's quite fascinating to me, that people are interested in other people.
Yeah.
You know, and those, and like I say, the generosity of life isn't just about money, maybe may include money, but it's a generosity of spirit, of caring, of loving. You know, and wealth isn't just money. Wealth is a whole attitude of being, a richness of life.
Yeah.
You know?
Right on.
Yeah. So to me, there is a great pleasure in being judged. You know, I like cooking. And when people come around here, I feed them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cook, I feed them. When the pizza oven's in, we're going to have pizza parties.
Oh, baby.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And I love it. I love people coming and sitting down and eating together, being together. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, love it.
Likewise. All right. I think that's a good way to summarise. You got a resource for the week?
Well, I'm going to go for two things, really. One is Plan International, which is what I do with Jocelyn.
Cool.
And the other one is I think, justgiving.com. It's crowdfunding, in effect.
Yeah.
But crowdfunding for positive purposes. Mm. And there were so many times when I've gone on to Just Giving to bung some money in the hat for people that are trying to do something or raise something or get something going. You know, and it's good. It's great. You know?
No doubt. Yeah, mine's a cool little film called Pay It Forward.
Oh,
from that, back in the day.
That is an emotional film.
Kevin
that
Spacey
is,
that and that tough. Young lad that I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you recommended it to me ages ago. I watched it and it's fantastic. It's quite it's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it
in
is.
Places, but very powerful.
Yeah,
but it's a good snappy movie. We'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
And a very good message, relevant to today.
What very much.
About. Check it out.
Much. Yeah.
Right, we're all done?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm good. I'm going to generously go and eat food now.
Marvellous. I'm going to generously go. I've had a text message from my wife saying, we have no milk. So I'm going to go get milk on my way
home. Milk a cow.
Generously.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sean, I'll catch you with you next week.
Yeah, you take care.
Livingthepresent.co.uk. Check it out. Show notes, links, yada yada, all that stuff.
And a blog.
Blog post that Sean will have written to accompany it. There's a link from this episode's show notes to the blog. You can't miss it. Right, Sean?
Yeah, that's cool.
Have a good one.
You take care.
See you later.
See ya, bye.
Bye.
I'm looking here.